Welcome, everyone. This is PWA Managing Editor Jen Adams, and today I'm sitting down with another Jen, Jen Phillips-Aples, to talk to you about finding ideal clients. As soon as Jen brought this idea to me, I instantly knew we had to dig into it, not just last month, but this month also, because so much of what we're taught as writers when it comes to career management focuses on us, our niche, our specialty, our marketing, and we get very wrapped up in that. But the reality is that our clients make such a huge difference in our day-to-day experiences as writers, as well as a huge difference in what we see in our bottom line. So I knew we needed to talk more about ideal clients, and Jen is the perfect person to join me for this discussion. Over the course of her career, Jen has worked with a wide variety of clients in multiple niches. These days, she's doing her work from overseas in her new home in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And this gives her yet another perspective on the perfect client, especially as she transitions her area of focus over to content marketing for travel companies. So, Jen, I'm so excited that you could join us today, and I'm really looking forward to our discussion.
Me too. I'm so glad that we could have this conversation because it's so important. I'm looking forward to diving in. Thank you.
No problem. This is going to be great. So, Jen, let's start at the beginning. So, thinking back to when you first started your career, you know, who were your first clients and what sort of projects did you work on?
Well, my first client, so let's just say I got started roughly 2011. I was working for museums. I had spent 10 years, a decade working in the museum field as an educator, where I did a lot of writing for newsletter and press releases and things like that. But my museum lost its funding, and this was, you know, right after the recession. So I thought, this is my time to go out on my own and be a freelance writer, which I had been, you know, studying the six-figure course and sort of tiptoeing around this idea, but this was it. This was my catapult. So I started going to local events because that's what seemed manageable and sensible, and I don't know what I thought I should do. So I found local networking groups. There were a whole bunch, particularly of women's organizations in my area, and I would show up, meet people, you know, and talk to them, and it was a great way to understand sort of the current market there in my town of in Bucks County outside of Philadelphia. And so my early projects, that's how I got my initial clients, and my early projects were actually very, very social media driven because at that time they were not, you know, these women were not understanding how to use this for their businesses, and they were chiropractors and psychologists and life coaches and acupuncturists and other kinds of professional services for the most part that I worked with. And so I started teaching a range of social media workshops and took on writing posts for them and helping them craft their content calendars. And oh, by the way, then that would also segue into writing for their web copy when they needed to redo their website or get a new site up. And I had a background in writing for the web because I've been doing that since 2005. When I had launched a website called All Natural Dog Treat. I was not new. I was new to getting clients. I was not new to writing for the web or anything else. Where I had been writing for this, I had created this website. I had about 200 pages of content. I learned about SEO. I was doing affiliate marketing. I was building an email list. I had a ton of people coming to my site. Almost 100,000 people a month came to my site. Over time because I had a lot of content and I was answering questions. It was all about dogs and dog health and dog nutrition and dog recipes and everything dog. which of course led into my later doing a lot of pet content, which I still do today. But that's originally how I initially actually like landed that first client, was showing up, shaking someone's hand and attempting to explain what I did, which I was fumbling and falling all over my face and not able to get it out in a cohesive manner at all. But, you know, someone sparked something there. She caught something, and she said to me, she says, so can you help me with social media? And I was like, well, sure, because I had been doing that with the dog site. So, that, you know, it all segued in. But that's how I got started.
Oh, that's great. That's so fun, too. It's like, you know, you get into something, and those money-making websites are such a I shouldn't even say a fun testing ground because they're serious for a lot of people in terms of like making money and getting visitors and getting attention. But you know, having your own property to experiment with and just learn the ropes so that when you do go to get clients, you're like, this is not unfamiliar territory.
Right. Right.
And then,
Go ahead.
No, because you said you were doing a lot of face-to-face networking and working with these professional service people. But, you know, what happened that really made you start thinking about the types of clients that you worked with? You know, how did you, I guess a better way to put it would be, how did you transition from just kind of taking what you found to seeking out what you wanted?
Yes, great question. And it took me a while. And, I mean, it's an ongoing process. There's no, like, magic moment, this is it. I mean, it might be for 10 minutes, I think, but, you know, it's an ongoing process. So I was doing a lot of the face-to-face networking. I was not landing big-dollar projects. I was going to a lot of events, which was good, and I was building up, you know, a reputation for myself in the area, but at the same time, it was taking up a lot of time. And so I really had to take, one exercise I did that I don't remember, I attribute this to a friend of mine, but she says she doesn't have any recollection of it, so I don't know. But the idea of looking at your, a bunch of your past clients, like let's sit down and like look at like the last year or something like this, and look at your last clients and go, okay, who did I enjoy working with? What kinds of projects was I doing for them? What was the pay rate on this? If you can remember how long it took you, that's a good one too, if you're not already tracking that kind of thing. And just sort of initially, just any data is good data, because for most of us, we get started, we don't really have any data. I should say most of us, but for a lot of us, you know, we're just like, things are coming in, we're doing the work, we're excited about that, we're looking for the next client, we want to get a testimonial, we're building that portfolio. But we're not necessarily tracking the data, like how long does it take you, and like what's your actual client acquisition rate, like how long did it take you to get that person, and you know, and these kinds of things. If it's a one-off project, that's a different thing from recurring income, which is what I've been really focusing on the last, you know, handful of years. And that's when I realized, I think I got very serious about this a few years into this, 3 or 4 years in, when I realized that I would be marketing less if I had more recurring client work, which meant I needed to go after a bigger type of client who had a bigger marketing budget and actually had a marketing budget other than, you know, a one-time kind of project here and there, or small scale things that took more time than was really paying off for me. So that's when I sat down and really went, okay, I've got to think about this in a very different way, in a much more strategic fashion. And, you know, and so I did transition into some local client work that was ongoing, and I still have those clients too. However, you know, you start looking at the bigger picture and where you want to be in a year or three from now, and what kinds of things you want to be doing. And, well, my interest shifted as well. And then when I knew that I wanted to be location independent, also meant that I needed to stop going to local networking events and start shifting my emphasis online, because otherwise I was just shooting myself in the foot, you know, because, you know, I was doing a lot of local things. And so I even started shifting my local clients. Even people I hadn't necessarily met before, but they were, you know, my name was passed around, so there were referrals, and they'd be nearby, and a lot of times they'd want to meet, and a lot of times I would say, if we could make it work, then I would say yes. But a lot of times I'd say, oh, we can do this on the phone, and I would just do that, because I was like, I need to train myself to hold my meetings online or over the phone. That was a major shift for me to do that. And, you know, and that worked. That was fine. If you present it in a way, then it's fine.
Well, but that is interesting to consider. As you look at your marketing, you're like, okay, I go to a lot of local events. And, you know, that's advice that we give new writers all the time, is start local. Start by going.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then, you know, depending on what your long-term writing goals are, then it's a limiting strategy too, because you're only going to meet people from your area.
Exactly.
And if
I was an hour outside of Philadelphia, so my local events could also include parts of New Jersey or Philadelphia, or if I really wanted to get ambitious, go to New York. It's not that far, except for it is the traffic and everything, So it's like, if I were to go into Philly for an event, which I did, several times, that's, up to 4 or 5 hours of your time. So you really have to start thinking about, okay, well, I can go to this event that's 15 minutes away, and those, I already know a lot of those people. But as you want to start building your base and get bigger clients, so if it takes me 4 hours to drive there, to park, to go to the event, am I getting a client out of that or not? Because, then that gets into, and so anybody in metropolitan area will understand that, because you're bringing in all these people from the suburbs or the downtown area. You may never see that person again just because of a lot of people. So it's harder to build the relationships, I found, that way.
Yeah, well, and I have definitely found, even when I go to local networking events in the different places that I've lived, sometimes you'll see somebody for 2 or 3 meetings and then you don't see them again for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have another way to attract that client, and sometimes just talking to people, you don't actually get, the right sense of their business to know if they have a marketing budget or if they can really, you're super charming in person and you talk a big game about all the projects that we're going to do together. And then I visited your website and I realized that's all
right.
Wishful thinking.
Right. Exactly.
Or that your idea of a project is $300, not $30,000.
Right, exactly. And so then when you start looking at that, you go, I really got to rethink this. So instead of spending that 4 hours going to a weekly networking group or just traveling for, more travel time, you could put that 4 hours into writing blogs for your business or doing some kind of online speaking. I mean, there's a million opportunities nowadays with that, or writing another email for your list, or doing some other type of online marketing strategy that's gonna build and really build your business rather than, I'm gonna show up at this event and hope that something happens, And leads to the next thing.
Yeah, well, and some of that does is you think about the kinds of clients that you want, because it's different. You're like, I want clients that I can meet with face to face, or I want clients who only work online, or I want clients
right.
that have a big website makeover to do because I like to do big websites, or I want clients that have active blogs that need content, because it really does shift your focus.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so now, I've written literally hundreds. I've written thousands of blog posts, right? And I've written over 1,000 blog posts just in the dog and cat space. So now, if I reach out to pet clients, pet related businesses, I look and see if they have an active blog, and then I'll send them a note and say, "Hey, so good job on the active blog. If you ever need another writer, let me know." And I actually just got a client recently because she said, "Oh, perfect timing. Our in-house lawyer just left." And you never know when that's going to happen. And she's in Rhode Island. I never would have met her. I'm in Mexico. I just came across her on LinkedIn because I was doing a search for pet marketing people on LinkedIn. And since I have so much experience there, that's kind of the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, so talking about focusing on blogs because you have so much experience or just, into areas where you have experience. We know as writers that our niche can really focus how we market and where we look for clients. But, as you were approaching it from the framework of I'm seeking for the best client for me, what are some
right.
of the biggest shifts that you made doing your marketing, doing your prospecting?
Yeah, well, that's been the biggest one. It's like, okay, so where's my experience? Let's find a match, right? And so what's my experience? Where are my interests? Where can I easily say, oh, yes, I've done that? And then let me go find people who have needs for that or who look like they may have needs for that. And then, of course, there are other things that I want to do that are more of a stretch. Like, okay, well, I don't really have that experience exactly, but I've done enough things similar that I know that I could if the opportunity presented itself. But so I'll reach out to people like that who look like they could have a need for other services that I could offer them, like going into the content marketing travel space, which I have a whole bunch of background in travel, and I have a whole lot of content marketing experience. So I don't necessarily have like the perfect thing, though, in that content marketing travel space for some businesses that I still am interested in, though. I know I can do the work. So I'm just looking at that and going, okay, how can I marry my interest and my background with what they need?
Yeah. Yeah, because it does matter. Well, and so then I know initially when I was starting out, I would absolutely respond to everyone who was remotely interested in hiring me. Mm-hmm. Anyone who would send me a check was my ideal client.
Exactly.
But there was a moment when I said no. When I said, no, actually, I don't want to do that. I don't want to work for you. I don't want to you and I are not a match, even though you have money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such an odd feeling where I'm like, I've turned down work. I hope I don't starve to death.
and it's very empowering, though, at the same time.
Yeah, well, scary and empowering, too.
Yeah.
So for you, when you kind of got to that point, you know, how did it feel when you were turning away a prospective client or even, you know, once you have a client, you start working with them and then you realize that you have that wonderful grading system in your essays. But you get to the point where you realize you're like, I need to flunk you out of my business.
Yeah, you're no
you
longer. You have now failed, and you can fail because of lack of communication. You know, people go MIA. I mean, they're just completely unrealistic expectations. I mean, which we always try to address early on, of course. But sometimes people just, you know, you just don't know until you start working with someone. And you know, it is a little scary when you say, you know, well, I don't really think we're a great fit, and I usually will try to make a referral if I know someone who I think would be a better fit for them. Although if they're, you know, if I think that will be a good match, I don't want to just send people to other freelancers who don't, you know, if they're not, if they just don't, you know, I would try to make sure that it's a good match on both sides. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, people, I mean, I've worked with this, and I think a lot of anybody who's been in freelancing world for any length of time has had a similar experience where sometimes you take on a client who shows red flags initially and you just ignore them. Or maybe they have something come up in their personal or professional life and everything starts shifting and then they're just so like not responsive anymore. So if they're not responding to you and that's holding up your progress on the project, then that's a problem. And they're not going to be mm-hmm. able to get anything. You know, they're not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to meet the goals of what you set out to accomplish with them. And you're not going to be able to complete the project because if they've gone, you know, missing. And it happens. You know, people get sick or something, some kind of, you know, thing happens in the business or that maybe somebody leaves the business, you know, they leave and take on another role somewhere else. And it's just, you know, it's in flux.
Yeah, so it is definitely evolving. And so what can PWA members or what have you found works to build your confidence and get better at spotting those kind of like, no, I need to move on situations or just flat out no situations early on?
Well, I think having a network of other freelancers is very beneficial. And so being part of the PWA network or whether and actually having a handful of people that you could send a note to here and there, you know, and they would know who you are. But failing that, I mean, even just reading like, you know, the Facebook groups or something, I mean, can definitely help bolster your self-esteem and your confidence. But I think that, you know, freelancing, especially if you're on your own and you're doing this, you know, your home, working from home, and it's great. And yet, if you're the only one there plugging away all day, you know, sometimes you lose sight of what else is going on in the world. And it's really, nice to have a connection with another freelancer or a few other people who are in the similar boat, so that you know that you're not just alone here in your madness and crazy making. You know that, oh, wait a minute, I just need to get a hold of myself here and go, okay, where did I go? What can I do better? Like, this didn't go well. So, like, that self-assessment, I guess, you know, this didn't go well. I don't know why. Or what clues might there have been why it didn't go why? And how can I improve it so that it goes better next time? And maybe that is saying no at the outset. Because sometimes you talk to someone who says, oh, and they're very excited, and maybe they came to you as a referral from someone else, and they're very excited to talk to you, and they've got these grandiose ideas, and they've got this great big concept of something that they want to accomplish, and yet, you know, and you're talking with them, you can quickly see that there are no benchmarks, and there's no concept of a benchmark, and really what it is like this big high-flying idea, such as a great question like, I just started this business. Can you help me get new clients? Can you help me get clients? And like, that's the whole thing. Okay, well, so what is the business? Well, then they don't really even have a business. I've had these conversations. It's like they think they have this business, but there's really nothing. There's no structure to it yet. So they're really not ready. You know, they're just not ready for what you and I could bring to the table, because they got to go do some foundational work first. That has nothing to do with the market piece of it, other than defining who they're what they're actually selling and who they're selling it to, which of course is a big part of the marketing piece. And we can help them with that, but they just aren't prepared. They just aren't ready, and their heads aren't there yet. So if that's a red flag, of course. And you know, I don't know, I fall in that realm of just like, well, I just want to help you. I want to help everybody, and it's just like you got to recognize, okay, this. Business is business, and this is not going to work. Like, you need to go and sort this piece out, and when you're ready, then we can talk.
Yeah, well, and that is so true about finding clients who really are ready to hire. Because when you're ready to work, you want to work with somebody who can make the most of your talent and the skills that you've been building. And I know I've had a lot of conversations with new writers where they're like, you know, I think I want to work with these kind of clients. I'm like, okay. Well, what are you looking to make as a writer?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they give me a number and I say, okay, well, based on the business structure that you're looking, I'll use lawyers as an example. This is a recent conversation. This guy had helped one lawyer with his website, and he's like, I think I'm going to help lawyers do websites. I'm going to specialize in the legal area. And I said, okay. And you know, what are you looking to make as a writer? And he was looking to replace a six-figure corporate job. And I said, okay, and you live in a town of about 20,000 people. And how many lawyers are in your town? And he's like, oh, you know, he could make that list. And, you know, how many of them are bigger firms? He said, well, you know, why wouldn't I just help individual guys? I'm like, well, individual guys are paying you out of their pocket. And you will have to get almost every lawyer in your town to pay you at least $3,000 to make your income goal the first year.
Uh-huh.
And then what are you going to do the second year?
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't very happy with that conversation, but it made him take another look at what he thought his ideal client would be, because the other piece of it, of course, is not just work that you like to do and clients that you like to help, but people who can pay you what you're worth.
Which is huge, exactly. Exactly. And when I was starting out and going into, you know, the women's groups, a lot of them were not seasoned business owners, and they had no clue how I could help them, or they didn't have a whole lot of a budget. So if I did work with them, it was for not a lot of money, or it was just a one-off project, like they're going to redo their website and they wanted me to write their web copy, you know, and but they didn't have, you know, an ongoing marketing budget, and it just didn't really even have the bandwidth to be able to work well with someone like myself anyway on an ongoing basis like that, just because the business is so small. And it's nothing, you know, nothing against that. It's just that what you said is so essential and so important, and I wish I had that insight, you know, when I was getting started. But I just didn't know, and I was scared out of my mind. And, you know, I was like, how am I going to do this? So, you know, you start with where you are. You know, in yoga
yeah.
class, I always tell people, you have to start with where you are. It's true with anything in life. You just have to start with where you are, what your skill set is today, what you know today, you know, the advice of tapping your network and find, you know, looking, to, you know, if you have coffee or lunch or call up people you know who work somewhere traditionally in the industry that you think you want to work in, you know, like your friend with the lawyer, the guy with the lawyers. I mean, taking that kind of a hard look, like, okay, here's where the market really is. And there's nothing to stop him from working with attorneys across the country. But it takes a very different
right.
marketing, you know, mindset. And yeah, it's probably going to take more than a year to replace a six-figure income.
Yeah. And it does change how you plan and how you kind of work on that going forward. And knowing, and you know, when you talk about reaching out to your network, you know, if you, and I know this is something I've talked about in PWA a couple of other times, so my apologies to all the veterans listening in. You've heard me say these things before. But when you know what you want, it's easier for people to find it for you.
Yes.
So this is, I need clients. I'm like, well, what kind of clients do you need? They're like, I need clients. I'm like, okay, well, break it down. Do you need email clients? Do you want to write sales letters? Do you short copy? Do you do social media? Do you, because the person who's looking for a sales letter writer doesn't want to talk to a social media person necessarily.
Yeah.
And somebody who wants to do social media management is not going to really enjoy a lunch with somebody who's looking for long-form financial sales letters. Like, there's just not, there may be a wonderful relationship, but there's not a client match.
Right.
And the same for what you said about one-off versus recurring. You know, I want to be in retainer relationships. I'm like, okay, well, that's a different type of client, usually a bigger client who has $60,000 a year to pay their writer a healthy retainer.
Right.
So.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's not to say that if you don't have any experience and that you don't, you know, don't start with small projects, because, you know, you got to start with somewhere. But as you grow, you want to make sure that you're going after people you know who can really be able to use your services and have the budget to hire you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to make such a big difference in your quality of life and your what you said at the beginning of this call and having the clients that you enjoy working with. It's just going to make such a big difference.
Yeah, well, and you'll be more focused in your efforts, too. Like, I realize when I switched, I used to write a lot of content, and now I write mostly long-form sales letters, like almost exclusively. And the people who hire for that kind of work, I mostly meet them at face-to-face events or through personal referral. I don't meet them in my local networking groups. I don't meet them kind of just out and about in the world. They don't come through my website. That's not how they hunt and hire writers. When
right.
I wrote content, I could find lots of work through my website. You know, local networking groups, I write and I do great blogs. Like, yes, please, God, come help me.
Right.
But it was different. It was different.
It's a different audience.
So now I spend more time paying to go to big industry events than I do making a point of going to my local marketing lunch. Because for me, that's where it's going to pay off more.
Exactly, which goes back to what we were saying earlier on. Kind of know what you is you're looking to do and who it is you're looking to connect with.
Because there's just less time spinning your wheels. Because I know that's where so many of our newer writers get frustrated. They're like, I'm doing all these things and nothing seems to work. And sometimes it is counterintuitive, but doing less can add up to more.
Absolutely, especially when it comes to marketing. Because it's more about being focused than about doing 1,000 things.
Right.
If you're not clear on what you do and what you're looking for and how you help people, it's really hard for anyone to either A, hire you, or B, pass on your name to someone else.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely
but
so
it's
true.
Really clear. Oh, here's Jen. She writes, she writes long-form financial sales letters. Since you run a publishing house that sells financial products, you probably want to meet her. Like, that's a match.
Yeah, it's very easy to say, well, let's have lunch because we already have a meet. Whether or not there's a hire out of that situation, we're like, well, at least we're in the same industry. you know, we have stuff to talk about. So
exactly. And, you know I wasted a lot of time in unfocused networking because I didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing and where to go. And
no, I didn't. When I started writing, there was no PWA. Like many of the resources that I lean on heavily now, LinkedIn was barely a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ways we connect with clients, the ways we connect with each other, they were not always there. So you do learn as you go. And I think like writers starting now actually have it so much better off. And then I sound like an old fogey when I say things like that. I'm like, back in my day, we used a site called Elim.
Break out the walking stick.
Yes.
I know exactly what you mean, though. It's so much easier. I wanted to be location independent most of my life, okay? It's been my fantasy to like live abroad and be able to not have to be in one place. And I hated commuting. And that was the worst part of having a job to me was commuting. And so I didn't want to do that. And other than that, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with myself, right? And so, of course, the internet, I had to rely on the internet to catch up to me. And writing was always a big part of my life. So let's factor that in, I had to wait on the internet to catch up with me, right? I mean, because this wasn't impossible 10 years, it was barely possible 10 years ago. To the level of
it was barely possible 10 years ago. I did it 10 years ago. I moved abroad and was kind of upscaling my writing career at that same time. And it was not always easy. And like now, like digital nomads are a thing. And they were not a thing when I was starting out.
Right.
People were pretty sure I was either independently wealthy or unemployed. One of the two. There was nothing in between.
Right.
On her computer a lot. But, I mean, throughout that, I had the chance, maybe every 2 or 3 years, I would kind of take a look and be like, okay, what am I doing with my business? Is this working for me? What do I want? So I didn't have the language that you laid out in your series about, like, this ideal client avatar and you know, really just putting some words around these concepts was wonderful for me. But how about you? Like, how often do you revisit, like, what your ideal client avatar looks like, you know, who your perfect buyer profile is?
Well, it's always in the back of my mind. But I'd say, I mean, I really sit down and actually take a look at it, you know, maybe every year, maybe every 8 months. You know, I mean, it's obviously you don't want to change it up. That's one of the things, especially in the beginning writers, it makes it really hard on people to keep changing it up, right? Like those first, like initially, like every month or whatever, you're doing something different. Like that makes it tough. So every year or so, I look at it and go, okay, am I still on the right track? But I'm doing more assessments throughout. Like, okay, what's working? What's not working? What am I enjoying doing? What's the most profitable work? And that's always, I find, to be an ongoing challenge for me too, because I'm not always the best at tracking my time and things like that. But you know, like how easily did that client come to me, and what's our relationship, and how much do I enjoy working with that person? So it's kind of an ongoing process, but I actually do sit down like every year and sort of look at the past client base and like what's working and what's not working in a little bit more of a strategic format.
Okay, so kind of about that year, 6 months to a year, and be like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I know, as you say, I do have people who tell me, and I've seen it, and I have done it myself, where they're like, okay, hard charging, I am absolutely going in this direction, and this is what I want, and then like 2 weeks later, I don't have any nibbles on my offer, and I freak out, and totally change
and
direction
change my
the
mind.
Other way.
Exactly. Which is why I keep saying go back to where you are and what your experience is, you know. We'll start with that.
And then give it a couple months to see if it sticks.
Yeah, and you really got to talk to enough people, too, you know. Reaching out to 5 people is not enough. That's not enough data for you. So, you know, you really need to talk to more people. Which is why, if you're starting, going to real life networking events is brilliant because you immediately see what's working, what's not working.
True, and you get the chance to practice what you're going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can do it in person in your community where it's a pretty safe space or a low-key environment, then getting on the phone with a client from across the country is easy peasy, relatively speaking.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, you know, you build up that confidence if you're going to, like, your local community events. And everybody, I mean, unless they've been going to them forever, everybody's like, you could start seeing, you know, oh, this person's really nervous when they get the, you know, their 30-second commercial, quote unquote. You know, oh, I don't feel so bad. I'm not the only one. You know? That, you know, you kind of start recognizing humanity, I think, in everyone. And it's not like you're throwing yourself into a pool of sharks. It's just like, no, everyone's just there kind of looking for the same thing. And everyone's looking for business and looking to connect with other people.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so how did it change? You started building your career with a face-to-face event, and then moved to more location-independent, like over-the-phone meetings, and then you uprooted. Because from Pennsylvania to Mexico is, you know, it's a different shit. You're probably not driving to New Jersey for anything right now.
Yeah, I haven't been to New Jersey in, well, I guess about a year. Yeah, it's, well, so once I made that commitment, several years ago was when I was like, okay, I'm really need to refocus myself on the online world because that's really what I want to do. I'm selling online marketing and, you know, so it's easier, A, to find people who are doing online marketing online, imagine that. But also, if I want to be location independent, I can't keep having coffee meetings in Doylestown. You know, I gotta get out. I gotta like train myself and train my current clients, and start putting myself out there more. And I think a lot of it was in my head, was, you know, because I was accustomed to meeting people face to face, and I could do that, and I had, you know, grown my, you know, certain amount of confidence around that. I was comfortable doing that. And it's a totally different matter when you start putting yourself online because it's like this big wide world out there. But once I started devoting my time to it, and honestly, I think it came to a head when someone invited me to come to one of those weekly events, you know, like the things that happen once a week on like a lunch or breakfast or something, and commit to that. And I was like, you know, if I take that 4 hours, that's going to take out of my life every week, including, like, getting dressed, you know, being presentable to go meet up with people at the crack of dawn, which I don't do mornings, but crack of dawns anyway. So, you know, like, there were a lot of things, just, like, logistical factors about this that were not going, I wasn't excited about. But I would have gotten over if it was, like, a great, you know, marketing opportunity, but I had my doubts. And I thought that was the moment. That was why I was like, I got to just focus online. If I can put that same 4 hours that would take to get up and be presentable and go to there to the 2-hour meeting, and instead just put that energy into you know, my online marketing, that's going to be more beneficial. So that was the shift. And then after that, and then you know, we were looking at like a time factor of like, you know, my partner's his youngest was going off to college, and then our lease was coming up, the place we were renting, and so it was like, do we want to stay here? Because we're going to have to stay here another year if we sign our lease. And I don't know about you, but I'm done with winter. This winter thing is not, I'm over it. So that was really, yeah. So that started putting parameters, right? I mean, because nothing happens until you put parameters around it. And that's where also going back to knowing your ideal client and putting some parameters around that. So this is kind of the type of client I'm looking for. This is the kind of work I want to do. And you make that connection. It makes your marketing easier. It makes moving abroad easier too. Hey, our lease is up in October. It's now March. If we think we're going to leave the area, we need to start thinking about this because, you know, we're not going to do it in a week. So, you know, so that it's just putting parameters around things. And then, once you have a deadline, well, things happen. Then they have to happen, whether you're ready or not. They happen.
Yes. Well, I mean, you set deadlines for yourself. You had a hard deadline. You're like, lease is up and we need to move.
Yeah,
I know you've exactly. You're like, okay, between now and the end of the year or between now and, you know, boot camp next year, because some people do like kind of the live event calendar, you know, I'm going to change this about my business.
Right. And I do think the deadlines are really, really important. And that's where however, it's easy to like kind of blow them off if you're not, you know, having some kind of accountability. And I mean, in our case, you know, okay, the lease is up. All right, we're not gonna renew that. So that meant we had to start getting our butts in gear with how, where are we really going? What are we really doing? Oh, by the way, we have this house full of stuff we've got to figure out what to do with. And you know, it's about that process. You know, and then like I don't know what it was. I think it was come August or something. We bought our plane tickets. I mean, because that was the hard deadline. I was like, all right, we got to be on a plane. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you start doing those things, and you're like, okay, yeah, this is really going to happen, and it brings up all your stuff, and you know, you're going to have a panic, and you know, and whatever, and that's okay. That's all part of it.
Very true. Very true. It's like, really,
we
you know, you're an independent there. Business person. One or two panic attacks a year? Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just control. You can only control so much. And so as you start, you know, whether you're 10 years in your freelancing career or you're, you know, 3 weeks in your freelancing career, it doesn't really matter. But, I mean, you know, everyone's got different skill sets and knowledge base, and coming at it with a different frame of mind. But a big part of it is staying positive. Everything is not always going to be beautiful and go the way exactly the way you want it all the time. And recognizing that that's okay, and what can you learn from this? But creating a plan, you know, creating that plan.
Mm-hmm.
Know they're going to be, you know, you're going to be, you know, are you progressing? It's always that. Are you progressing? What did you learn from this? I mean, maybe you had a big project and it was fabulous and it was really wonderful, and now you've decided you want to have 12 more like that, like your attorney guy you were speaking about earlier. Like, so now he decided he wants to be an attorney marketer. Okay, fine. Well, he's going to have to, how is he going to get clients? You know, and okay, well, he had his attorney project and that was really great, so how can I find X more like that? You know, and then put your parameters around it. What's the size of that project? What's the size of that firm? Because, I mean, I know attorneys, we all know attorneys are, you know, single-person operations. They're not going to have the same budget that a large firm with, you know, 20 or 30 employee attorneys are going to have. Or more,
right.
150 attorneys, you know? I mean, you know, and where does your skill set best lie in that kind of work, if that's what you want to do?
Exactly. Well, and you talked too about kind of owning those next steps and setting your deadlines and writing your future story. You know, we joked about the panic attacks, but it is true. Like, you have to manage your emotions and kind of be like, this is the direction that I want to go on my journey, which is not the same as anyone else's. And how am I going to script that out? And what does that look like?
Yes. And I think it's a powerful exercise to do that. And then there's, you know, the try it on, like, so because if you do that, if you sit down and really actually write it out, then you start thinking about it differently. And if you, and then like tomorrow, how do you feel about it? And what about next week? And, you know, and you may go, you know, and it starts seeping into your brain somehow. It's a powerful exercise. I mean, psychiatrists have done this for decades. The neurons in your brain start, they're very adaptable and very flexible, and will start, and if you tell yourself X, Y, and Z, it's not just positive thinking, it's, okay, and what would I do if that were the case? So if I'm going to be, you know, a six-figure copywriter, and I'm going to work in X, Y, Z space, and this is all going to happen in the next, you know, 18 months, what are the steps, where am I now? Because that's important. You've got to take stock of where you are now. And then, how am I going to get there? Start mapping it out. And giving yourself your credit when you make progress. So, you know, you land that next project, or you get a project completely different from what you've been doing that is exactly the kind of thing you created in that script.
Yes. Well, it is, you know, when you're writing your own story, you're like, I have to decide where the rewards are and where the chapter breaks are and where I give back to myself a little bit, which I'm terrible about doing. So it is a little hypocritical. Like, and now you pick when you take a break. And I'm like, I compulsive need to write and be online and all of those things.
Oh,
it may seem
I know.
Like that that makes me happy. And it's very hard to unplug, but I'm like, and how are you rewarding yourself? And when are you unplugging? And I'm like, never.
I know. I'm like that too, until I get to like, I have to go, I go. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in major brain fog right now. And I'm trying, this is where I'm trying to get better at that. I'm like, oh, maybe you should like put down all the electronics and go take a walk or go do yoga or read a book or do something that doesn't involve a screen.
Well, and essentially when you're in that client searching and like starting out phase, it's like refreshing your email endlessly will not bring new messages.
Yeah, it's not going to bring you client projects, right. You know, so doing other things where like you're taking measures of going, okay, I've sent out, you know, X, Y, Z letters of inquiry or per day, you know, and you're tracking yourself in like that kind of a way. Now that's productive, as long as you don't just, you know, exhaust yourself. You've got to take a break to refresh yourself and remind yourself of why you're doing this.
Right, because we all got into this for freedom. Either
right.
Income freedom or location freedom or just not having to go into that job anymore freedom. So
right.
Feeling free.
Right.
A key part of it.
So yeah, and that's a great, you know, statement too. And like you can ask yourself, you know, throughout the day, do I feel free right now? No, I feel like I'm chained to this chair. Oh, well then maybe you should take a walk. get out of that space for, you know, even just 5 minutes can really make a difference. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm good now.
I can take a walk in the middle of the day and there's no one stopping me.
Right. Or even just stand out on the balcony and, you know, take a deep breath. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm kind of getting to own that surroundings and owning your future. And, you know, you made this big move recently, but, you know, as you think about, like, your ideal clients going forward and kind of what's the next chapter for you, you know, what, now that you've made a big leap, what's the next leap? Or is there another leap?
Oh, there's always another leap. That's my philosophy anyway. And, you know, I've got a couple of different irons in the fire. Really will see what really shakes out. I mean, I'm continuing to write. And earlier in the call, we mentioned the content marketing travel company. So that's a strong interest of mine. I am doing some travel writing for some blogs. And that's fun. And then, but also, I mean, someone recently brought a project to us that has nothing to do with, well, it does have to do with copywriting, but it's really a business venture. So we'll see. We don't know what the future holds, but I think that the rest of the year is going to be very interesting. And then next year, it's going to be pretty terrific. I have it. I've got a lot of things that are percolating right now, and I'm kind of in the space of like trying to see where is it, which one's going to be the most intriguing or show the most promise, and you know. But I'm not. Other than my finished writing piece, I'm not stressing about any of it. I'm not putting too much pressure on any of it right now. I'm kind of like, okay, let's just see where this is going to go.
Well, I hope the most interesting project clearly bubbles to the top so that you don't feel divided about your next choice forward.
Yeah.
So, but as you move forward, you know, for our members who'd like to connect with you after this call and kind of keep up with your journey, what's the best way for them to keep in touch with you?
Okay. They can connect with me through social media. I'm very available on, you know, on LinkedIn, and periodically I'm on Facebook, less and less these days, but I'm there. my website, of course, is jenfieldsapril.com or rightwordsmarketing.com. It's the same point to one another. And I do send out a weekly email about marketing tips, which people can get on that list if they're interested. And so that's where people can reach me.
Wonderful. So, like, any other key lessons or advice that you'd like to pass on to the PWA community?
Yeah, I would like to say, I'll see if I can make this succinct, soundbite worthy. be patient with yourself, but don't let that be an excuse.
Okay, can you unpack that a little bit more?
Yeah, I can. So I think we're too hard on ourselves, mostly. You know, people in general are just too hard on themselves. I know I certainly am. And that's often not very useful in the long run. And yet, and it's a fine balance. It's a very fine line of setting goals for yourself, breaking it down into manageable steps, and proceeding, you know, to do what you said you're going to do. And versus, I don't feel like doing that right now, or this is too hard right now, or what have you, and then, you know, saying you're going to do X, Y, and Z, and then you keep finding excuses for not doing it. And so that's what I mean around that. And usually that excuse, when we find that we're making excuses about not doing something, it's usually because we have some kind of fear around it, or we don't really quite know what step to take next. We may not know what to do next. You know, when you talk about that, the guy with the who wanted to replace a six-figure income within a year by writing lawyer sites, that's really taking a look at what's that going to take. So that's, I think, a lot of things, something that people don't do enough of, because we aren't trained in this. We don't learn this in school. It's nothing as an oversight on our educational system. But like, how to break down a big goal into bite-sized pieces. Like, how do we do that? And what you were saying about, you know, okay, this is how many lawyers are in your town, how many of them have a budget for, you know, this kind of website, and how many of them are going to hire you. And like, that is like, oh, okay, that's a really crystal concrete, you know, idea. It's got concrete details, specifics you can get your head around and go, huh, yeah, that's probably going to be pretty tough. So how do I revise my goal? Or
right.
How do I expand my thinking to achieve said goal? And maybe you need to adjust the timeline, or maybe you need to get you're adjusting the project itself, or what to some degree. But that's something that I think that it's really important that we often overlook. We state goals, but we don't really know how to get there, and then
right.
We don't make as much progress as we want, and then we beat ourselves up. And it's a vicious circle.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help.
Because
sometimes
it is. It is. But, you know, you can look at your goal. You know, if you have a six-figure writing goal and you say, okay, I want to do it in this way. Like, okay, if I do it with sales letters, okay, I need to have 7 to 10 sales letter projects this year to do that goal. But if I do it with emails, then I probably need to write 500 emails.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's just a different, like, realizing that up front and being like, okay, if I'm going to write 500 emails this year to hit my income goal, that means I need to write how many a month and then how many a week, and just knowing what you're going to have to give to get what you want.
Right.
So that you can plan
exactly.
For that.
Right. Right. And then it's like, okay, so if I'm going to write 500 emails in a year, then how many clients, how many average emails might my client have, for example?
Mm-hmm.
And so then how many clients do I need? And, oh, well, then I need to go talk to people who send out emails every month or every week or every day at XYZ rate
mm-hmm.
in order for me to hit my target.
Right, because 500 a year, you're like, what, 10 a week? You're like, okay, so who mails 10 a week? You're like, okay,
right.
Probably nobody, but lots of people mail 5 times a week. You're like, okay, so I need
uh-huh.
at least 2 clients like that.
Right.
With budgets.
Right. Yeah, that is a key indicator there, with budgets, so with a solid marketing budget. Yeah, because it's totally doable, and there are lots of ways of slicing and dicing, you know, the six-figure
mm-hmm.
goal. there are lots of ways to get there, but most of us, I think, you know, just get overwhelmed and bogged down in the details of how we're actually going to do it because we don't know how to break it down into, oh, so I'm going to write emails and I need to, you know, so then I'll have to write 500 emails this year and I'll need to get paid, you know, an X this rate at, for the email. So, and then that helps you put parameters to it because nothing happens without parameters.
Right. Yeah, no, 500 emails a year, you need a client who pays $200 an email. Well, that's
right.
Probably not your next-door neighbor with the Etsy business, although she might
exactly.
have a fantastic Etsy business and do that. But, you know, you're like, okay, so my ideal client in this scenario needs to look like this.
Right.
And then you're just, you're focused and you're on the trail of what you want.
Right. Yes, exactly. What kind of clients pay that kind of a rate in emails that often? Well, then that starts helping you break down who you're going to reach out to.
Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, you have traction, and the next thing you know, you have income,
yep.
and then suddenly you have a career. And you're like, how did
right.
I do that?
Right. But it really is that biting the elephant, the small bites, right? It really is that, okay, well, let me start there, and let me break that down. And okay, so now that I have a concept of who actually, I'm not going to find those clients in my local networking group, you know, so where are those clients? You know, and you start, and then you start looking and reading your email, for example. Everyone's got loads of potential clients in their email box. And where does your skill set lie? Like, what's your match? You know, that's so important. I'm not an outdoors person. I like to go sit on the beach and read a book, and that's my idea of being outside. I am not a hiker. I'm not a camper. I mean, so I'm not going after camping-related things or anything like that because I've never been inside of a tent in my life, and I don't tend to start now. You know, but I think that like people
yes.
just don't even think about that. You know, it's like no, get really concrete. Like, what do you really not have any interest in at all? Oh.
And
no,
it's
have,
okay
I
to
have,
say I really have no interest
exactly.
whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there are plenty of people who eat that up. I have friends who think of going and spending a night in the woods in the rain in a tent that the flaps come down and the rain gets all wet. I mean, they think that's great fun. I think that sounds like a miserable time.
Oh my goodness, me too. But but yeah, I think glamping, not a term that existed when I was younger. Otherwise, I would have been I'm a glamper. I'm a glamper.
Right.
Like
exactly.
we are not spending the night in this tent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. I was saying that. I'm like, well, today's glamping tent with the chandeliers and the running water. Now that's camping I can get behind.
Yes. But knowing that and being okay, you're like, I'm going to say no to these things because I want to say yes to other things.
Right.
And
you know, we all have a finite amount of time and energy. Come on, you know, so do the things you want to do and work with the kinds of clients you want to work with. Do the kinds of projects you want to do. There are lots and lots and lots of opportunities.
Yes. And especially now, as you said, the internet has caught up to us and the whole world is your oyster.
Right.
So.
There's no reason why you're stuck in your, 5-mile radius for a client base.
Yes. And that is actually something for all my PWA community members that I am working on getting someone to write us a series about tapping into that international market, either from the U.S. or from overseas, but just expanding your horizons and working with the full range of companies out there who can hire you and pay very well.
Absolutely.
So.
Oh, yeah, I've worked with clients in Australia and England and Canada. You know, I mean, there's no reason why you can't work with clients all over the world.
Right, because just as, like, you and I have both moved. Like, you're abroad now, I was abroad before. It's like, if we're location independent, our clients can be too, and it's just
right.
more opportunity.
And you just moved across
so.
The country. I mean, you've been location independent for a long time.
Yes. It really is. Like, I should find more writers close to me. I will, though. Coming project. But anyway, I could talk to you for ages, but I did want to thank you so much for joining me today for an official conversation more or less, and for bringing up such an important topic in the first place about client choice. Like, this has really been wonderful to bring this up, and I look forward to hearing more ideas from you and also to hearing from the community about how things shift for you when you're focused on your ideal client. So thank you to everyone who joined us today, and to everyone who sent me questions and queries in advance. I truly appreciate your involvement in the PWA community, and I look forward to next month when we'll be hearing from some of our brand new writers that I met at boot camp this past week. And until then, keep writing, keep connecting, and keep using all the tools inside PWA to help you build the writing life you love.